Well, starting off with another question, see if I can make that last. Did that get on there too, did it? Strike it.
I will. When I summarize it, I'll strike it. We haven't talked much about your mother. As I said earlier, one knows something about her early years, her growing up years.
I wasn't there.
No, but you've read the book.
I have.
But in reading her biography, there's several things I thought were interesting. She served on the school board in Claremont for 8 years.
I didn't know that.
Well, that was from Who Was Who Among North American Authors. I don't even know if that's correct.
I have not read it. I'm not familiar with it.
Then she also was a trustee for Scripps College.
I knew that. I knew she was very active in and interested in Scripps College, and was very pleased to contribute her time, and I don't know whether she contributed money or not.
Mm-hmm. Then she was president of the Friday Morning Club in Los Angeles.
Yes, that's true.
Could you tell me something about the Friday Morning Club?
Not from personal knowledge or thing. Anything I tell you is purely hearsay, but I understand that at that time she was a highly controversial figure in the club. In other words, that was at or during the WW1, World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And she at that time had been married to Paul Jordan Smith, who was a highly skillful speaker, and what we would call a radical. In other words, he was a, I guess now you'd call him a young rebel.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he I'm not going to try to analyze people for you. I'll tell you what they did.
Yes.
One instance. There was a strong peace movement throughout the United States at the time we entered World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And the group had planned to meet in Chicago by special trains from all over the United States. He and one other local radical at that time were the leaders of the on the train from Los Angeles, and I think it started out with maybe 200 or 300 people. About when they got to Chicago, I'd say about half of them were no longer members of the group. And it dwindled down to, I think someone said the Marines are going to attend the meeting. I think maybe 2 or 3 are all that attended of these thousands over the entire United States. But he continued his speaking. He would speak to large groups of people, and he would get his message across by exaggeration and sarcasm. And he was doing this while reporters from the FBI and the government or whatever were taking down every word.
Mm-hmm.
And he would speak of someone from the Senate as such highly honorable gentleman and scholar in whom we all hold in reverence and bow before his infinite wisdom, who has voted to kill the children in Honolulu, or some such. And he could, he was an entire. My mother was his wife, and she apparently absorbed and thought many, she adopted some of his ideas. At that time, they were vegetating in Claremont. And she decided that, she told me this, so I'm not judging, that she was sitting there, she'd written her books and painted her pictures and had decided that after all she was just as good as the average person, and she'd come into Los Angeles and prove it. She had nothing else to do, she said. So she joined the Friday Morning Club. And she was frank in promoting these ideas, and it was highly controversial, as those always are. And there was another woman who was quite powerful in the club and socially prominent. And her family still is. I can't remember the name. And they became rivals, you might say, leaders of the herd. She on one side of the... And it was a very troublesome time for the whole group, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the war was over and they gave that up and she got old and tired. And unfortunately died at natural causes, but if everything is natural as far as I'm concerned, the bug is just as natural as well. She caught trichinosis.
Mm. Mm.
And her companion, who was with her when they ate the meat, was very ill but recovered. And I think at that time she was... Probably, I don't know the exact, 61 or 2.
Well, Fanny Bixby Spencer also was active. She was active as a socialist and in the peace movement.
Yes, very, very much so. Very, very highly belligerent and aggressive about it. In other words, I admire her. Put it this way. If you don't mind a personal observation, some people are highly individualistic. You might take the hermit at one point, and some are collective to the extreme, where you get the extremist socialist, if you will, at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And Fanny Bixby Spencer was toward the extreme individualistic. And my mother was inclined that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I am inclined. Well, you're talking about me too, I know. He trapped me into the witness stand and said, "Turn him loose." And I swore to God I wouldn't talk to myself about myself. Well, I don't mind being individualistic as long as I don't kick other people in sin. I don't care what other people think. It's, and a matter of fact, if they don't live the way they think, I think they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you try to conform against what you really are, why you're missing a big, you're making a large, big mistake. Fanny went her way. My mother went her way to a certain extent. Now I've talked myself out of forgetting even what your question was, except something about Fanny.
Well, that she also was involved in the peace movement from the writings that she's done.
Yeah, but that was long before the... Well, I don't know whether it's long before the World War I or not, but she was always She was a very nice, a beautiful woman, very nice, and she was, in my opinion, unfortunately, a member of a family that has helped some and has ruined some, just from the matter of fact of having the money.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the possession of wealth is a road to destruction unless you're very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've got me off on a wrong turn, because I could sit here for hours pestering the hell out of you. Let me get off it and get back.
Okay, well.
Ask me a factual question.
Oh, well, I was going to ask you about other members in the Bixby family that you might remember or have any.
I remember dozens of them.
Well, I can remember dozens. Your mother in her book said that her father listed 125 first cousins, so I don't care about all of them.
Well, the only ones that I would say I know are the members of the Hathaway Bixby branch. That's where the old Parson Hathaway with his five daughters teamed up with the Smiths. And do you know how that happened? Have you read the Flint Diary?
Yes. I haven't read it thoroughly, but I have read it, yes.
Well, that gives the early story.
Yes.
How they went over and came back, took
yes.
the gold.
Yes.
Well, they somehow or other, they knew Parson Hathaway back there. It had these five beautiful daughters and one son.
Yes.
And one of them, I think Llewellyn was the one who married first. That, you have that little family thing? Well, it gives the dates in there. Which one married first? I'm not interested in playing it, but whatever it was, the first one. The others went back then and met the Hathaway girls, and they were compatible, and they married, and they moved out here.
Mm-hmm. Well, then.
And they had most of the people I know about are listed in there by name. You see.
Well, then you would have remembered Joseph Bixby and his wife Margaret.
Very slightly, because when I met them, they must have been in their 70s or 80s, mm-hmm. something like that. But my impression of them, that my Aunt Martha, or my Aunt Margaret, when I knew her, she was sitting more or less in a chair like this. I don't think she was quite that bad off, and he was looking at it from the eyes of youth. He was a very civil old gentleman, overweight, very nice. And the two or three times that I've had anything to do with them, they were as a small boy, age 12, 10, 12, and they were very pleasant and just nice people. And I remember my mother, who used to go down to see them occasionally, and we lived in Claremont. At that time, we took the Santa Fe train to Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and then the old Salt Lake line down to Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And they met them there. Come Christmas, my mother said, well, she went out and picked wildflowers and brought them for a present, rather than trying to pick up something in a store or something like that. And it was a very pleasant relationship. About their personal lives, I think it must have been quite tragic for them in many ways, because of what happens to the descendants whom you start off with being caring for and loving and so forth, but you can see them break up and go to hell, or some of them, in other words, just like any family, some pass a test, some drop by the side of the road, and do what you can to help. I can talk for hours about the troubles and not very much about the pleasant accomplishments of them, because those are the troubles are the things that come around, and I think one of the tragic ones is with George H. Bixby, I think he must have been the oldest son of Joseph. It's in there somewhere. It doesn't make any. But he married my cousin, we call her Cousin Millie, who was a very fine woman. And Georgia, you can look it up in the old newspaper files of the Times if you want to, about his activities. I'm not going to repeat it here at all. If you want to do research there, you go down and pick on George H. Bixby, and you can read your head off about it. I'm not going to repeat it here. But I will say that the family reached a point where one of the sons kept an automatic army had been in the war. He kept an automatic under his pillow. He's going to shoot his father when he came if he showed up. In other words, they call them skeletons in the closet, yeah. But they're facts, and this family is no different from any other. In other words, we're all just a temporary phenomenon, or temporary phenomena.
But he was also
He was president of the company at one time, George H. Bixby. But that's a yes. He was with the Bixby Land Company too. No, he led what I consider a tragic life, for whatever the opinions were.
Yeah, he was president of the Bixby Land Company from 1918 to 21, I guess. I know that when I spoke with your cousin Llewellyn Bixby, he said that he was quite close to Amelia Bixby, that she was very...
That's Cousin Millie.
Yes.
Yeah, I was extremely fond of her, and I think she said she was... We used to call each other our favorite cousin and whatever. No, she was a very fine woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she went through the tortures of hell, I'm sure. And she held her family together as best she could. And she turned it over to them in very good shape after, in spite of great obstacles.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Bixby said that she told him that it was time for him to come work for the company. Yeah, I think at the time when his father died.
That's right.
When his father died, that it was time for him to join the company.
That's right. And speaking of my cousin Llewellyn Bixby, whom you spoke with,
yes.
He took on the job of running a company where a bank vice president sat on the board. Because the company was so highly indebted to the... Did he tell you all about this?
Yes.
Well, then I won't bother.
Well, he didn't say that the bank sat on the board.
Yeah. And not only that, they wanted him to just sell off everything and cash out. And he did not do that. And I'll say one thing. When my mother died, when she had this trichinosis, I had to talk with her. And she said to me, she saw... She presumed something. She had to, because she spoke about the future. He says, she told me that my cousin Teddy, Theodore Chamberlain Jr.,
mm-hmm.
and Llewellyn, my cousin, and I would run the company.
Mm-hmm.
And she had good reasoning and forethought, because I didn't get in there until... Well, the records will show when I got into the company. It doesn't make... It's no nothing to worry about. But we ran the thing with the help of... my memory's pretty lousy. Paul Elmquist, who is a real estate man. He and my cousin Llewellyn were partners and so forth, and Mr. Elmquist had a great talent for dealing with people and finding good, sound people who would fit into the master plan, which was that was to sell as little of the property as possible and to put it to good, secure use. And then luck has a great deal to do with living, I'm sure. Strike that. Growth of population in the area. The condemnation of some of the acreage there, and the ability to reinvest the proceeds without paying any tax or loss,
mm-hmm.
enabled the companies to acquire acreage in Imperial Valley and other parts of California, amounting to about the same fraction that the generation preceding mine had.
Mm-hmm.
The total acreage that they had originally was astounding, and
mm-hmm.
but they had as far as pure acreage is concerned, why the Alamedas and Bixby Land Company own about the same number of acres that they had at that time, which reminds me about Aunt Martha.
Mm-hmm.
There was once upon a time a corporation called the Palos Verdes Company,
mm-hmm.
and they owned the whole peninsula there. And when my Aunt Martha died, she left in her will, and she told us that she was going to do it, her stock in the Palos Verdes to Pomona College, I believe. She said the rest of us had enough. That's just another little
mm-hmm.
little thing about Aunt Martha.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got me wandering. Start me off with a fact question. I wind up telling you something different, probably.
Well, let's talk about another branch of the family then. Fred Bixby and his wife Florence.
Well, I used to play as a small boy with the children of Fred and Florence Green Bixby. Start off with Fred. I heard him on the 50th wedding anniversary, which was celebrated down at his ranch house down there, that he was very lucky. He married the best little farm in the class or whatever it was that Florence graduated. I think it was Berkeley or Stanford. I'm not mm-hmm. Berkeley. But there's plenty of tragedy in that family, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think his young son, I think Fred had a young son named John, who was killed himself in an accident when he was driving home away from a wedding celebration by running his car into a telephone pole. And Fred himself was a can't tell you what people are. It's my judgment. It's no good. It's my judgment. He was a rancher, a businessman, who struck oil on his Long Beach property. And as a fact, I happened to work as a lawyer for a fellow called Colonel Kenny, who had been with, I believe, Associated Oil. He was an army colonel, had been in the Philippine uprising, whatnot, and a what do you call these lobbyists in Washington for the oil lobby. And he was the man who was in charge of getting the lease on that Alameda's property started. And when he took his crew, started to take his crew in there, he told me that Fred came out with a shotgun and said, "You can't come here. You don't have a right of way in your lease." And the colonel had faced many more guns than Fred ever had, and he said, but Fred put his gun down and walked back into the house, and the Colonel Kenny went in and started studying in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Fred had large holdings down in Arizona, a big ranch, and the neighboring ranchers there swore that he started his ranch by rustling their cattle, and they would kill him if he ever came there. And he started out every year to go, as I understand now, this is just family gossip.
Mm-hmm.
But he never left the town. He never did get out to the ranch for some reason or other. Either he had a cold or something called him back to Long Beach or wherever he wanted to go. But he was a pleasant man to be around. One thing that sticks in my memory is I was having breakfast when I was a small boy, and my mother was visiting with the family down at their Alameda's ranch house. He illustrated how he took care of a hard-boiled egg in the morning for us, and his theory was you throw it to the ceiling and catch it when it came down, and proceeded to do that. He also was interested in what greed would do to biological products or biological entities. He had a sow which had a litter of, say, 11 piglets. He took one piglet and put it in the corn crib, which is a place where he's... And that pig developed into a splendid fat pig about four times the size of its, what is the modern thing for siblings, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Its siblings. After having enjoyed that, it died at the age of about 4 or 5 months. The tragic part of his life was that he wanted his son Fred to become a rancher and fight. This is who say too. He took Fred around to his various ranches and humiliated him in front of his family and the ordinary, the usual, not ordinary in the sense of inferior, but the employees and workers around there, because he wasn't a physical, he wasn't, because Fred wasn't the kind that took for physical labor or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he bred in Fred an undying hatred, which Fred spent his whole life inventing against his father, and I don't know whether it included the rest of his family or not. I don't know whether Joan has told you anything about this or not.
No, not directly, no. We've heard stories that there was a great deal of litigation even between and Fred was.
Well, I can tell you what the first litigation was about. Fred set up...
Mm-hmm.